speaking on this program is Brother Gary Cawley.
Time is, of course, the most precious commodity in all of the world. I quoted to you yesterday from Ephesians 5, verse 15 through 17, where the Apostle Paul wrote the church at Ephesus and said, "Look carefully how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. And be not foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is." So time is short. In Job 14 and verse 1, he said, "Man born of woman is a few days and full of trouble." And so we realize that time is involved. The first reference to time in the Bible is the very first verse of the first chapter, where in Genesis 1:1, he said, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." That was the beginning of time upon the earth. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth, time began. We're bound by time. All of us have the same amount of time, so far as each day and each week is concerned, but we don't know how long life will last. We do not know whether our lives shall be short or long, or medium. Many of us in this number have lived several years and enjoyed the blessings of the time that has been ours, and we should enjoy. It should be, though, used to the honor and the glory of God, as we're going to learn in the things that Jesus used his time for. To redeem the time here, which Paul mentions, is buying back the opportunity or taking advantage of every opportunity. We realize that making the most of every opportunity is one of the most important things that we can do in life. You have today. This is the only day you actually have. Yesterday is gone. It'll never be again. And tomorrow is not here yet and may never come. In James 4, verse 13, beginning, he chides them somewhat in saying, "Go to, now ye that say, today or tomorrow we will go into such a city and spend a year there, and we'll buy and sell and get gain, whereas you know not what shall be on the morrow. But what is your life? It is but a vapor that appeareth for a short time, and then it vanisheth away. For that we ought to say, if the Lord will, we will live and do this or that." So when we think about these things, we realize the many demands upon our time and the importance of using our time correctly. Referees call time, and prisoners serve time, and musicians mark time, and historians record time, and loafers kill time, and statistics keep time, but we want to just know how to use our time. So when we think about those things, to recover or rescue our time from waste and to improve the use of our time is most important. Benjamin Franklin said, "Time is the stuff life is made of." And that's right. It is the stuff that time is made of. And you know, God has given you and me just enough time to accomplish all of the purposes for which He put us here upon this earth. It distresses me to see those who seemingly don't have any purpose in life. If we didn't have a purpose, why would we want to live? We're here for a purpose, and we have enough time to use to do what God intends for us to do. It's somewhat like the little boy that wrote the essay on skin. He said, "There's just barely enough to cover the body." Well, there's just barely enough time to do everything that God intends for us to do. And you have 168 hours in every week, 24 hours in each day. So do I. And have you ever wondered in those hours why some people seem to have time to do the sick visiting or to see to the needs of others? They have time to enter into the activities of the Lord's church while others don't have time. Why is that? Well, because some have taken to heart Matthew 6:33 that says, "Seek ye first the kingdom of heaven and His righteousness, and all these other things shall be added unto you." So one of the lessons from our perfect example, Jesus Christ, is to see what He had time for. And as we study these things today, we'll learn that He had time for the important matters of life. Are you acquainted with Him? How did He use His time? You know, I like what is said by one man of Brother J.W. McGarvey. It said that when he wrote about the apostles, he wrote about them like they were his next-door neighbors. And that's really true. He knew them. He knew them because he'd studied them. Though he had never met them personally, he spoke of them like they were his next-door neighbors. Some, of course, think of him as far away, as Christ being one who doesn't know, doesn't sympathize. But let me tell you, He knows all about us. In Hebrews 4:15, he said, "We have not a high priest who cannot be touched with the feelings of our infirmities, But one who in all points was tempted like as we are, yet without sin. And so he knows us. He knew how to leave us the perfect example. So let's hasten to see some of these things that Jesus left the example in doing. First of all, if you will, turn to Luke, the second chapter. And in verse 41 through 52, we find the first reference we'd like to make today on the fact that Jesus had time to be about his Father's business, here precluding his ministry by about 18 years, his personal ministry. We find that he was astonishing the doctors. His parents had gone to Jerusalem, as was the custom of the Jews, to pay their taxes. But you recall that they, when they left, thought he was among the kinspeople and the relatives, and so they got a day's journey away before they decided he wasn't there. Now, don't think that's too strange. I went home one time, my wife and I did. We had a large number of company coming and a lot of children, and we thought our son rode with somebody else. And it was an hour later when one of the deacons called and said, "What do you want me to do with this boy?" I said, "What boy?" He said, "Your son." My, was I embarrassed. I had left him at the church building, and this man had taken him home because I thought he was among the people who were coming to the house. Then I thought he was out playing with them. And I had quite an answer to give to that, and they've never let me live it down. But Jesus' folks went away from Jerusalem a day's journey before they found he wasn't in the company. So it took them a day to get back, and then on the third day, when they finally found him, he was in the temple, or in the temple court, and he was asking and answering the questions of the doctors. And they were astonished at that. And of course, when his mother asked him, "Son, why have you done this to us?" He said, "Why did you look for me somewhere else? Where did you think I'd be? Don't you know, or wish you not, that I must be about my Father's business?" Now, many boys of that age would have had time only to see the trained camels or the dogs or the donkeys or something of the playthings of the day. Jesus used his time, even at the age of 12, to seek out the things concerning those answers from the doctor. Maybe it would be good for us to ask, where might we have expected to find our son? In that day, have we trained him well enough that we know what he would be doing at certain hours? For instance, on Sunday morning at Bible study time, if you needed to call your son, would you know where to reach him? Or at worship time Sunday evening or Wednesday evening? Or during the gospel meeting, would you know where your son would be? Jesus had time, and we need to be sure that we use our time wisely so our sons will be in the right place, and so that we may lead them in the right example. Are we the proper example for our children? In using our time and being about our Father's business, it does take time to be a Christian. It takes time to be a good neighbor. It takes time to be a good citizen. It takes time to invite others to this gospel meeting, doesn't it? But shall we be about our Father's business or not? How are you going to use your time today? Second of all, I want you to notice that Jesus had time to be baptized. In the third chapter of the book of Matthew, we find recorded in verse 13 through 17 that Jesus came from Galilee to the Jordan unto John to be baptized of him. And you can imagine the large throng of people that were gathered around John there, and all of a sudden quietness comes as one figure walks through that audience. And when he comes up to John, he says, "John, I want to be baptized of thee." But John says, "Not so. I need to be baptized of thee. Comest thou unto me?" And Jesus said, "Suffer or allow it to be so now, John, for thus it becometh us to fulfill all righteousness." Now, we know that Jesus was not baptized for the remission of sins. He had no sin, 1 Peter 2:22. But we also know that he wanted to be our perfect example in showing us to obey God in everything, even unto baptism. And so Jesus came to be baptized of John. He had time to do that. He had time to walk 60 miles in order to be baptized. Did you notice that? He came from Galilee to the Jordan, 60 miles. He didn't have a Cadillac car. He didn't have a bus or a train to ride. He didn't even have an airplane. But you know, some don't have time to walk 6 blocks because they don't realize the importance of baptism. And because of that, many today say, "Well, someday I'll get baptized." That just rakes my ears over here. Somebody talk about, "I'll get baptized," like you're going to get the measles or you're going to get the whooping cough. We don't get that. We submit to be obedient to the Lord. And so to be baptized is important because the Lord commanded it. Others show a lack of respect for it in that they say, "Well, you come forward, all right, we'll save you now, but we'll baptize you a month or so later when we have a baptismal service." Well, if they respected that and believed it as the Lord commands, they'd have time to do it. Jesus had time to be baptized because it was the Father's will, because it was important. And in New Testament times, people who responded to be baptized were baptized the same hour of the night. You remember the jailer in Acts 16 and verse 33? And it says he took them the same hour of the night, washed their stripes, and was baptized, he and all of his straightway. All in his house who were able and old enough to believe and become Christians did that. And so what a wonderful example this is. You know what time it was when they were baptized? Midnight. Sure you do. All right. What kind of people would you suggest would be out at midnight baptizing somebody? Have to be gospel preachers. It wouldn't be a denominational preacher. He won't hardly baptize in the daytime, much less in the middle of the night. But here is a good example for us of these who were baptized in the New Testament. It also distresses me sometimes when people who are Christians seemingly don't have time to see others baptized. They have to leave. They don't have time to see one born into the family of God. Well, Jesus had time to be baptized, and he had time to be about his Father's business. What else did he have time to do? In Luke 4:16, there we find he had time to go to worship. The Bible tells us there that he came to Nazareth, and where he had been brought up, and he went, as his custom was, into the synagogue on the Sabbath day, and he stood up to read. Why did inspiration put that last phrase there? And he stood up to read. Well, to show us that not only did he faithfully attend worship under the Jewish age, but he was also ready to serve. You know, it's kind of hard when you look for people to wait on the Lord's table, make the announcement, lead the prayers of the congregation, and a person says, well, I just can't. Well, I told my son early in life a rule that I had made for myself, and that was when someone asks you to do something in the Lord's church, you do it. You say, I'll do my best. And you know, he wrote an article in his paper not too long ago on that rule that I had shown him. Just do your best. You don't have to do the best there is to be done, but try. And you know, if we're ready to serve, we'll be better servants as we go through life. And so the important part is that Jesus had time to worship. You know, under the Christian dispensation, we're going to have to find time to be holy. Time to worship. In Matthew 4, when Jesus was tempted of Satan, Satan said, worship me. And many people do. But Jesus said, get thee hence, Satan, it is written, thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and him only shalt thou serve. In Hebrews 10:25, we find a direct negative command. Just as strong as thou shalt not kill. When he said, not forsaking the assembling of yourselves together as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another and so much more as you see the day approaching. Some people think they're too busy to go to worship. They say, who's going to keep the stove? You know, I have a quote here that I'll let you guess who it came from. It says, if a man's business requires so much of his time that he cannot attend Sunday morning, Sunday evening, and Wednesday evening services, that man has more business than God intended for him to have. You know who made that statement? J.C. Penney. J.C. Penney was a member of the Lord's Church, and he was a successful businessman. But he never, never, as far as my report is, let his business get ahead of his worship unto God. It is said that one of our presidents said one time, when an aide came to him and said, you've got an important appointment here this Sunday morning. He said, I already have an appointment. Oh, but he said, this is very urgent. He said, I have an urgent appointment. Well, he said, where are you going? He said, I'm going to worship God. We have to find time to worship God. Multitudes are worshiping, all right, but they're worshiping other gods besides the God of our creation. We ought to offer unto him our homage of heart. Jesus had time to go to worship. Furthermore, if you turn to Luke, the 6th chapter, verse 12 and 13, Jesus had time to pray. He had time to pray, and he always prepared for any great crisis or difficulties or important work. Before that work came or those difficulties came, he prayed. You remember when he chose his apostles here in Luke 6? The night before, he prayed all night long. Now, that's important to us, isn't it? Jesus was a praying man. And we ought to be also. In the Garden of Gethsemane, it's recorded he prayed three times. He said, first of all, Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. If it's possible to redeem man in any other way, let it be, so I won't have to suffer this. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. The second time he prayed, Father, if I must drink this cup, thy will be done. And the third time he prayed the same. He often prayed fervently, as Matthew 26, verse 35 through 46 records about that. He wasn't like the man who prayed the same prayer every night. Maybe you've heard about him. He prayed the same prayer. He just had that all memorized, and he prayed it for so long, he got kind of tired of it, so he wrote it down, and then he'd just read it to the Lord every night. He'd just read his prayer. Finally, he got tired of that, and he just tacked it on the wall, and every night when he went to bed, he said, "There it is, Lord, read it to yourself." Well, we're not to be that way. That's certainly not the kind of prayers we're to be. We're to be fervent in prayer. In James 5:16, he said, "The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much." You know what fervent means? Have you ever had water on a stove and it begins to boil? When it begins to boil, that's fervent. And so, if we're to be fervent in prayer, it's not a dead, lifeless prayer, like we can't wait to get through. It is a living prayer. It is an earnest prayer of a righteous man, a man who does righteousness, a man who obeys God. So, we have the proper attitude toward God, then we're going to be praying people. We're going to be people who find time to pray. You know, you can pray stopped at a red light. It doesn't matter where you are. That's the beauty of this, is that we can pray anywhere, and that we should pray everywhere. In fact, Paul said in 1 Thessalonians 5:17, a short verse, "Pray without ceasing." Pray without ceasing. Now, that doesn't mean you pray all the time, every step you make. But it does mean you have those regular times of prayer talking with God. And through His Word, He talks with us. Jesus had time to be about His Father's business. He had time to worship. He had time to be baptized. He had time to pray unto the Father. He also had time to teach others. And that ought to be something that we have time to do. You know, we're to redeem the time and use every opportunity. And there are people who come to us on a daily basis almost that we will be the only ones probably that have that opportunity to teach. Oh, how many we've missed. You take the 100 or so people that are in this congregation and you have each of them aware and open to opportunities to teach, would you be surprised how many people this congregation could teach? Jesus never knew when that opportunity was going to come. You remember in John 3, there was a man named Nicodemus who came to him by night, and he could have said, "Nicodemus, go away and come back tomorrow. I'm tired. I've been working hard. Everything's run together here. Oh, man, I just don't have time to teach you." But he didn't. He took Nicodemus in that very hour that he came, and he said, "Now, Nicodemus, the kingdom is coming, and you must be born again in order to enter it." And then went on to explain that it was of water and the Spirit that a man entered the kingdom. That's the way the new birth was. It's not two births, one of water, one of Spirit. It's one birth with two elements involved, born of water and of the Spirit. In other words, when Jesus removes the figure in the Great Commission, He just simply says, "Go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved." Then again, you remember at the well in John 4, Jesus taught the woman there. She was there to draw the water. By the way, ladies, the men didn't draw the water then. The women were the ones who did that work, and they still do. When Maggie and I went to Jerusalem a couple of years ago, that was still kind of startling to us, but the women did the drawing of the water, watering the cattle, taking care of all the outside work. Now, our ladies wouldn't want to do that at all, I don't suppose, but that was the custom of that day. Now, Jesus came to that well about noontime. His disciples went into the city to buy food, and they had to eat too. But when they came back, He was talking to this woman who had come to draw this water. And they were surprised, first of all, that He was talking to a woman, and second of all, that He was talking to a Samaritan woman. And they said, "Come on, Lord, and eat." And He said, "You don't know it, but I have my meat, and it's to do the will of the Father." And so what He was saying was, I have a more important work to do right now than to eat. This is when the Lord lost His appetite. And you know, if we have the opportunity to teach, eating should not get in our way. There shouldn't be anything that stops us. When that opportunity knocks, let's redeem the time, okay? Let's take advantage of that. Well, somebody said, I would go out and teach somebody. Somebody give me a card. There's no organized visitation program here. Not at all. Now, that's not wrong, and it's good. But, friend, I don't have to be told who to go teach. I can go out and preach, or I can go out and teach and be right in the sight of God. In fact, I was first hired by the Lord to do that. And I want to do it at every opportunity that is mine. Jesus took the water of that well, and He said, if you would have known who asked you this, you would have asked Him for the living water. Oh, that whetted their appetite. He said, what living water? You don't even have a bucket to draw that with. And this account is so interesting. He led her from that living water to her sin. He said, go get your husband. She said, I don't have a husband. He said, no, you don't. You've had five husbands, and the one you're living with now is not your husband. And then, of course, she knew that he had to be a prophet. At least, if not the Son of God. She was taught about worship. You know, you can teach people all of these things. You know. You have the grasp of truth and how wonderful it is to use your opportunities to teach those who don't know. So Jesus had time to teach others. In Matthew 25:31-46, Jesus had time to visit the sick. You know, he did visit several times, and he taught us to do the same. He said, I was sick, and you visited me. When you go to the hospital or you go to a sick room, do you think, there's the Lord? Or do you think, oh, that just takes so much time, and I've got other things I want to do. Those cookies are to bake, and that dinner is to fix, and those babies are to be taken care of. Well, all of those things are important and a part of living the Christian life. But also, it's important to find some time to visit the sick. In Matthew 8:14-15, he healed Peter's mother-in-law. He came to their house. He had not had opportunity before, but here's an opportunity. He has a fever. Peter needs to have the truth confirmed in his mind by a miracle, and he heals Peter's mother-in-law. You know, the Catholics say he wasn't married. I've never known a man who would be married without, who would want a mother-in-law without being married. Have you? Most people wouldn't have a mother-in-law even if they were married, if they could help it, but here certainly is a mother-in-law, and Peter's mother-in-law. In other words, his wife's mother. So when we understand that, we understand that Jesus had time to minister to her, and then when he brought her forth from her difficulty, he ministered to him. He also went to Jerusalem, and as he passed through the borders of Samaria, he found 10 men who were lepers, and they came crying to him, oh, have mercy on us. This is recorded in Luke 17:11-19. 10 men who were living dead men. And Jesus said, go and show yourselves to the priest. That's what they had to do to be counted clean from leprosy, as the law said. And as they went, the Bible says they were cleansed. And one man turned back to glorify God and to be grateful to Christ for what he had done, for keeping him from being a living dead man. Jesus made that famous statement then, were there not 10 clean? Where are the 9? Now, I use that to show you, my friends, that you will not always be appreciated for what you do. If you're doing what you're doing in the Lord's service just for the popular applause, forget it. Because it won't be long till somebody's not going to clap when you do something good. But do it to please the Lord. Do it to please Him who made us, gave us, and gives us all things that we enjoy. Jesus had time to visit the sick, but only one returned to thank Him here. And that may always be the case. You know, many say, I just don't have time for the sick. I hope you've already gotten the idea that those who say sometimes, I don't have time, means I don't want to. And so we have to be careful of our motives, and we don't want to lie. Do we have time to do these things? And yet we're just not using our time wisely. I know that there are those who don't have time to care for the sick, but if they get sick, they want everybody to have time to come see them. I don't know if you have any of those here or not, but nearly every place I've ever lived, we've had some who squawk the loudest when they think not enough people are coming to see them when they're sick. But when they're well, they wouldn't go visit a sick person to save their life. Oh, me. How self-centered and hypocritical can we be? Jesus had time to visit the sick. You know, many members of a family sometimes say they don't have time to take care of their own family. And I think that's a very tragic thing because they miss a blessing by not taking some time for the sick and the dying. When does a person need you anymore than when they're ill or when they're dying? And we need to find some time to do that, especially for our own, our loved ones. Don't forget to have time to visit the sick. Jesus further had time to pay his respects to a funeral procession. In Luke the 7th chapter, or verse 11 through 16, we find Jesus coming into the city of Nain. And as he came in, there was a very sad sight there. There were many mourners around a young man's casket there. And this one who had lost this son was a widow whose husband had died, and this was her only son. And how sweet is compassion. Jesus had the power, and he used it, to confirm his word to those people by raising that young man from the dead and restoring him to his mother. The Bible says in Romans 12, weep with those that weep and rejoice with those that rejoice. That's a command. We are to weep with those that weep and rejoice with those that rejoice. And when our compassion is as it should be, then we'll want to do that. You know, sorrow and need always touch the heart of our loving Savior. And it should touch our heart. Jesus had the time to pay some respect to a funeral procession. Here's another one that maybe you hadn't thought of in Mark 10, verse 13 through 16. Jesus had time to play with little children. I am afraid of a man, and I must confess this to you, that doesn't have time for little children. I see some men, they don't want a little child around. Get away from me. Leave me alone. I just don't believe that's like the Lord wants that at all. In fact, Jesus' disciples, when the children were brought to him for him to bless them, touch them, the disciples ran them off. Get away, the master's too busy. Well, you oughtn't to be too busy to pay some attention to the children. And Jesus rebuked his disciples. Now, there's one thing proven here. The disciples were not used to christening babies, that's for sure. They didn't, quote, baptize babies, which none of them do anyway. They just sprinkle a little water on their head and call it baptism. But they weren't generally used to that, evidently, or they wouldn't have caused these children to be taken away. But Jesus, when he saw that, said, "Suffer little children to come unto me. Of such is the kingdom of heaven." And he took them in his arms and blessed them. Can't you just see that? I don't know how big the Lord's hands were. I don't know how big his arms were. I don't know how tall he was. I don't know anything about his stature, because the Bible doesn't reveal it. But I can just almost imagine that he has the big hands of a carpenter, and that he is loving on those children. You know, we need to take some time for our children. Many people have time for some children, every child except their own. Now, they can take care of other children just fine. They can tell you how to raise children. They don't know how themselves. I've never seen anything to beat it. One place where we lived one time, where my father preached, we had one of the meanest little boys I believe I've ever seen. He put a frog in the baptistry. He would do anything. You just can't imagine what came next to that young man. His mother didn't ever think she saw him. If she saw him doing anything wrong, we never did know it. She was on every PTA program you could find. She was taking care of everybody's children except her own. You know, mothers, we need to take care of our own children as well as others if we have the opportunity. But number one ought to be ours. And we are responsible for them, and we ought to take care of them instead of trying to go out to all the PTA meetings and all the club meetings instead of seeing to their needs. When those children come home in the afternoon and they holler, "Mother," they don't really want anything except to know you're there. And forbid that any of us should have an empty sound when they cry, "Mother." We ought to respond and we ought to be there for them. That's what's wrong in our nation. We have homes that don't have time for children. Don't get me on my soapbox this morning, but it distresses me for a couple to have a child and then go back to work immediately and give that child somebody else to raise. My, where is our sense of self? I think about the maid who said one time, "They don't trust me with the dog. They just let me take care of the children." I know some people who have some mighty good dogs. They can say heel and that dog will stop right there. And they can say stop to their children, they keep right on doing it. They don't spend the time training those children, they do that dog. And that to me is just beyond me. I can't understand that. But Jesus had time for little children. Will you not forget that? Jesus had time to eat. In this day and time, a lot of people don't find any time to eat. They can't stop and eat, and certainly families don't eat together. I think that's a tragedy. You mean we don't have time to sit down at the table and eat together? To converse with each other? To talk about important things in life together? Don't we have time to eat together? Jerusalem Church ate together in Acts 2:46. They took their meals at home. And that's a very enjoyable blessing. Jesus, of course, took 5 loaves and 2 fishes and fed 5,000 people in Matthew 14. And in Matthew 15, he fed 4,000 with 7 loaves and just a few small fishes. He picked up 12 baskets full the first time of leftovers and 7 baskets full the second time of leftovers. Jesus ate with those people. He ate with the publicans in the center. That's what he was rebuked for, you know, by those who didn't like him. "Your master eateth with the publicans and the sinners," but he did so in order that he might teach them. And some, seemingly in this day, have no time to cook, have no time to eat, no time to be with their family. And that's a sad shame that they're not following the Lord a little closer than they. Jesus had time to eat. He had time to sleep. You remember in Matthew the 8th chapter, verse 23 through 27, that they all, the disciples and he, were on a ship. And there came up a great storm, and when they got to looking for the Lord, he was down below asleep on a pillow. He had time to sleep. He had to take care of the needs of the body, so do we. And we ought to be able to take care of those without apology. Now, I don't know who other of the preachers have the problem of people calling at 10 or 12 o'clock in the daytime and say, "Were you still asleep?" Now, they think that's funny. But, friend, I don't know if anybody works any harder than preachers do. And I do not know of those who are called in the middle of the night and then have a good humor the next morning when some fellow who doesn't do anything in the church, as a general rule, calls and says, "Are you still asleep?" Well, what's wrong with it if he is? Shouldn't he have the time to rest when he needs that? I dare say that his work won't let him overdo it, but we need to take care of the necessities of the body, and sleep is a part of it. Our Lord said to his disciples, "Come ye apart and rest a while." And there is work that's very strenuous in the Lord's work. It's not for sissies. And those who are weak in body will not last long trying to hold the load of a preacher of the gospel. But some don't have time to sleep, they think, except in worship. Sometimes they find time to sleep in worship service. I'm glad none of you are asleep this morning. Jesus had time also for some social affairs. You know where his first miracle was wrought? Cana of Galilee. What kind of an occasion? Why, a wedding feast. Not only that, but he worked a miracle there. He turned those six water pots of water into fine grape juice. And then, of course, he ate with the publicans and the sinners. He had time to do that, to teach them, Luke 15. Now, these are things Jesus had time to do. I hope you know all of these things, and I hope that they are appealing to you as direction for your life. Christian means Christ-like, and we're to be like our Lord. You know what? He also had time, and I know my time's about gone, but he had time to make provisions for his mother. That's important to me. I think that's very important. In John 19:27, he did this on the cross. He said to John, "Behold thy mother." And he said to Mary, "Behold thy son. Take care." Now, he had to take her into his own home. And, of course, this being the reason that Mary was very poor. And Joseph, no doubt, is now dead. And the brothers at this time are still unbelievers. And the Lord knew Mary didn't have anybody. And so he took care of this matter, even when he was in mortal agony. He had not had a need to do it before, but the cross was shameful. Mary would be excommunicated from every social affair about her. And no one would care for her except perhaps the good Apostle John. You know, that's a good example, though, for children. How sad to see an ingrate. I know of nothing sadder than to go into these nursing homes and find people who haven't had a phone call from their children, haven't had a letter, haven't had any care, it seems, at all. They don't have time for it. And I've often thought, my, that's awful. I can't imagine children not having any time whatsoever to pay respect and honor to their parents. And I'll tell you what I've learned. I've learned that those are the parents, generally, who, when those children were growing up, didn't have time for them. And now those children have turned it around. And what a sad thing. I would hate to think that my children would care nothing for me because in their early years, I didn't take care of them. And you know, some people have started winking at such passages in the Bible, as 1 Timothy 5:4-16, where he says, "If a man or woman has widows or those of their kinfolks in need, let them take care of them, and let not the church be charged." We try and take care of everybody sometimes, except those who are really widows indeed, or those who are orphans indeed. Now, I'm not against helping anybody. But I do think that there are certain stipulations in the Bible on who we're to care for. And we should care for our own, is the lesson that teaches. Jesus had time to prepare for his work to continue after his death. We need to all remember that John 14:15-16 were all addressed to the apostles. When the Spirit would come to them to guide them into all truth, that was for the purpose of continuing the work that Jesus had started. I think all preachers ought to do some writing. All elders ought to do some too. Because those who come after them, they will be helped so much by what they read and what they see in the lives of others. I am so thankful for Brother N.B. Hardiman, Brother C.R. Nichol. I'm so thankful for Brother Foy Wallace, Jr., who took the time to leave us something as a result of their great deep study. And we are very much profited from those who have gone before us, and we ought to make some plans for our work to continue. Jesus said in the Great Commission, "Go teach all nations." What's he doing? He's making plans for his work to continue after his life has been spent. Well, last of all, Jesus had time to put death into his plan. Now, that may seem strange to you, but in Matthew 26:27-28, when he instituted the Lord's Supper, he said, "This is my blood," when he gave them the cup. He said, "This is my blood of the New Testament, which is shed for many for the remission of sin." Which is shed. It means he's talking about it as if it's already done. Which is shed, and he hadn't died yet. Death was in his plan. We all ought to plan to die. That was the way he planned to spend some of his time, but you know, many people don't think they have time to die. But they'll die anyway. And we need to make plans, of course, to to die in the Lord. That's the main thing. There are only two places you can die. One is in sin, which Jesus spoke of in John 8:21-24, when he said, "I tell you, except you believe that I'm He, you'll die in your sins." You can die there. You can die in your sins and cause your soul to be lost eternally. Or Revelation 14:13, "Blessed are the dead who die in the Lord. From henceforth, yea, saith the Spirit, they shall rest from their labors, and their works do follow after them." Child asked her mother one day, "Mother, is Daddy going to heaven?" And the mother said, "Why, sure, hon. Why do you ask?" She said, "Well, who's going to keep the store?" She knew Daddy didn't have time to leave the store to worship God or to do any of the things that I've talked about today that Jesus had the time to do, and she wondered if Daddy was going to heaven. She had a very valid question, didn't she? Now, time is important. So we read Ephesians 5, "Look carefully, therefore, how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. And be not foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is."